Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 28th of January. This hour of the program, we're going to get a ton of calls on this, I'm sure. Those of you who have problems with organization, it's not just boys, I think it's many of us. But for some reason, it seems to particularly affect boys, and we'll find out why. The author of That Crumpled Paper was due last week, helping disorganized and distracted boys succeed in school and life. Anna Hamoyan is our guest. She is the founder and the director of Green Ivy Educational Consulting. It's an educational consulting firm that encourages junior high and high school students to create their own framework for academic and personal success. I got to tell you, she's got stories in here and descriptions of boys in different categories, and she just nails many of the boys I know and many of the people I know as well. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her. I have a feeling that this is a pretty widespread problem, and we'll get many phone calls for Anna. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Missed assignments, lack of focus and enthusiasm, falling grades. She has turned the most disorganized, scattered, and unfocused boys into successful young people who consistently meet their personal and academic challenges. And she says that most boys need to be taught how to get organized, how to study, how to visualize, embrace, and meet their own goals. Anna, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Thank you so much for having me. Hi, good morning.
Hi. Now, tell me about male students. They are, on the average, you write, between 6 months and a year behind their female counterparts when they start school, and then girls just stay ahead all the way through their senior year. What's going on?
Sure. Well, when we think about developmentally, boys typically hit puberty 2 to 3 years behind girls. And a lot of the things that are happening in schools today, if we think about schools today, require students to be good multitaskers because they have 6 or 7 different classes, all with different short and long-term assignments and different expectations. And boys, especially preteen and teenage boys, really struggle with multitasking. They do better when it's one thing at a time. So the reason why they're struggling in comparison to their female counterparts has to do with the fact that really school and life for many preteen and teenage boys requires them to be good multitaskers, which they simply aren't.
And the school is organized to be a multitasker in many ways.
Sure, and not only your school, but also a lot of kids do a sport or an extracurricular activities, and playing baseball, for example. You have hitting practice, batting practice, conditioning, and then team practice, and then you play games. So it's not just the little things that we were thinking of just in school, but it all encompasses to make a lot of boys feel really overwhelmed. And when they feel overwhelmed, they tend to want to give up rather than figuring out a system. Because it really, what I've noticed is, even if these boys want to come up with an organizational system, they really struggle to do that.
And girls are better multitaskers for what reason? I can understand why they are now, because they're doing most of the work in the house, and they're also working, and they keep track of everybody's schedules and the doctor's appointments, et cetera. But it wasn't always thus. Is there something about our brain wiring that's different?
Well, research shows that the part of the brain that deals with multitasking and that sort of integration is more developed in girls and boys. It's still, in the early stages, but anecdotally, it makes a lot of sense. A lot of parents who have both boys and girls can easily attest to the fact that their sons struggle with organization and just keeping track of things, even though they're really bright and intelligent, in a way that their daughters might not.
Mm-hmm. You have, I must say, because I was reading this aloud to my family members, you have these disorganizational styles down to a T. You really do.
Thank you.
These are good. Do you want to talk about those some and how you came up with the overscheduled procrastinator, the scattered charmer, the tech master? They're very good.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I've worked with hundreds and hundreds, close to 1,000 students over my work with students. And I've seen different patterns of disorganization, and not every student is the same. And a lot of times when we read about disorganized kids or disorganized people, we talk only about left brain or right brain. But what I found is that there's styles and personalities to it. So, for example, the overscheduled procrastinator, which is a great kid who just has way too many activities on their plate and becomes really stressed out and leaves things to the last minute, which then creates a crisis every time. And, you know, this boy may be juggling tennis and basketball and being the senior class president and AP classes, or may have, you know, honors classes or what have you. So it's not that this is a bad kid or a kid who doesn't want to do his homework. He just has so much on his plate that he doesn't know how to prioritize and gets pulled in all these different directions. So a lot of parents, you know, relate to that. They'll say, oh, my son is doing well in school, but he is a procrastinator and he gets really stressed out and it just, he's up till 3 a.m. And then the scattered charmer is kind of the opposite of that. It's just a really personable young man who forgets his homework on the printer and probably in junior high and high school was, or early high school, was able to get by with turning it in late with a smile. But then as things go on and there are consequences, he's getting zeros on assignments, so his grades really don't reflect his ability. And then I go through and I talk about other students, that, including those who are really creative, and then the, you know, those who are really intellectual in terms of conversation skills. We all know that, you know, eighth grader who really speaks to adults well, but his room looks like a tornado hit it.
Right.
And so parents really, the feedback that I've been getting from parents is that they really can identify with those styles because they feel like their sons have a lot of the traits of one or maybe more than one of those styles, and so they can use that and kind of the tips that I give for each one in order to kind of create a system that works for them. And that's what this book does. It gives parents tools to work for them in their home.
And do they learn those styles from their dads, or do they learn those styles in part from their dads and their moms?
It really depends on the family structure, because, you know, a lot of the students that I have, not a lot, but there are some students that I have that don't have a mom or a dad figure in their home, or maybe they have both. But really where it is it's their own developmental process that's part of their personality. So if you think about it, when I talk about, say, a seriously struggling student, and that's a student that might or might not have learning differences, that really struggles in school, that works hard, a lot of how they operate within their school, they might be shyer, they might not interact as much in terms of extracurricular activities, and they really want to do well, but it takes them a lot of hours to do their homework. A lot of that personality develops out of their school, you know, and their role within their school life, because they spend so much time at school.
Mm-hmm. You make people come to see you with backpack in hand?
Absolutely. I want to see what that backpack looks like. I have kids who come in with, and I tell them when they first come in with all the papers that are in your bedroom, on your dining room table, or elsewhere that should be in your backpack. And so we go through all of them, and we get them organized.
And it's amazing what you find at the bottom of that backpack frequently, huh?
Sure. I had a student just last week. He must have brought out like 20 pens, 10 of which were broken of some sort, like highlighters. And I was like, this is extra weight that you're carrying around. And he's like, wait, I have more. I have a couple more. You know, it keeps you on your toes, and it always keeps it interesting. And kids sometimes when they first come in, and I talk about this in my book with parents, they're really embarrassed about the state of their backpack or the state of, you know, where they are in school. And one of the most important things that I do is create a very non-judgmental atmosphere and an atmosphere of, okay, so here's where you are right now. We want to improve. We got to start from ground zero. Let's go through everything.
Right. And let's talk about parents for a moment here, because they want the best for their children, but sometimes they're just consumed with, oh, my gosh, you're not getting into school. Your grades are awful. They're harsh with their children because they want them to succeed, but they're not succeeding. And so we tend to not appreciate some of the lovely points about our children.
Absolutely. And I think it gets really challenging in these times where we're all so busy all the time. And so we look at the grades and we look at the results and we don't remember, you know, the challenges that each kid is facing. And when a kid comes into my office and they say, I really did poorly on a test and they're about ready to give up, I always say, let's look at that test. And by the same framework, when a kid is coming home and they're not doing well in school, it's let's look at the backpack, let's look at the planner, let's look at the skills that you're having and why you're struggling, rather than just saying you're struggling and just be really angry about that. Because every kid wants to succeed deep down inside, and I see it time and time again. Even the students that I see that they come in with a wall up, they They really want to do well. And so by hearing from, and they're living up to expectations from everyone all over, you know, whether that's their peers, their parents, their teachers, their coaches, they have all these expectations and they're trying to live up to their own as well. So parents sometimes underestimate how much their child really does care, especially with boys who try and show that they don't care as much.
Right. So obviously many people will hear what you'll say, what you're saying, and they realize that they've had conversations in their house and they may have been fairly heated conversations because the report cards keep coming to you and you're not very good and the homework's not being done for just can't find it or choose not to do the homework. So these conversations, because future is at risk at sometimes, parents can lose it and get a little mad. Mm-hmm. And then teenagers who are known to be defending their territory or not wanting to talk to their parents about some things can get a little mad as well. And then you want to change things and you can't because nobody is communicating. They've got all this baggage. So how do you break through that?
Well, I talk about in my book, making a fresh start and just letting it go. Just starting, what you can do with your son is schedule a time a few days in advance. You may or may not be the right person to do this. I say this to parents all the time. But if you are, you know, schedule a time that both of you are going to get organized, and maybe you can work side by side on the dining room table. He takes one half, you take one half, and then you're working through your own pile of papers if you have that. And just really create an atmosphere where you have cooperative, collaborative meetings. And that might be something different than anything you've ever had before. But one of the things that parents can do is start to talk to their kids about what their goals are and what they really want to accomplish in life. And from that, you're creating a framework for the child to start to see that being organized can get them where they want to go. And that's what I talk about a lot with kids, is it's not about me or your parents or your teachers, it's about you. And for that 45 minutes that you spent texting your friend, calling your friend, going online, trying to find the homework assignment,
right,
because you didn't know what it was, you could have gotten it done, and then you can do whatever you want. And that is the most powerful elixir for a boy. So, you know, really changing the way you're making an argument. I'm just saying for parents, just saying, you need to get better grades to go to college. For boys, that's like not a winning presentation, and it's not motivating. Instead, they really need to have a longer conversation about what each boy or each their son wants to accomplish and how, you know, how they can help them get there faster, whatever that is.
Yeah. I was amazed the number of hours in some circumstances boys will have to do what they want to do if they don't do work while listening to music. And they can do this. I've seen it. You text, you're doing your homework, but you're also going to Facebook at the same time. And you're listening to music. You've got all this going on at the very same time, which I find phenomenal.
Right. And there was a recent research study from the Kaiser Family Foundation that showed that students now are using multiple media sources at once. And that's actually decreasing their ability to concentrate. And that's it just came out a couple weeks ago. And what it really highlights what I see every day in my office. You know, when kids take away all those distractions, they're able to finish things faster. And once they do that a couple times, they're really excited by the fact that they can go to bed earlier. That's the number one thing I hear from kids all the time. I get to sleep more. And when kids first come into my office, because, again, I create this non-judgmental atmosphere, and we all do in our office, you know, I have kids who tell me that they spend 2 hours a night just texting, you know, texting. Or they're texting till like 3 or 4 in the morning. And they're wondering why they're really tired at 9
a.m. Yeah, right, right.
You know, I mean, it doesn't always, that connection isn't always made for them. So sometimes, you know, someone has to make it in a positive, funny way rather than a blaming, you know, sort of method. I mean, just much more positive to make a fun joke about it and think about it and have them think about it and plant the seed and give them the facts, you know. That's what I do a lot when kids are sleep deprived. I talk to them about, okay, well, let's do the math and let's figure out you're supposed to get this much sleep. This is how much you are getting. Let's do it over a course of a year. How many nights are you missing of sleep?
And that makes a huge difference to be exhausted. You sleep through class. People sleep through first hour class.
Absolutely. They sleep, not only do they sleep through class, but the effects on their body overall is just enormous. They're susceptible to illness, they're susceptible to injury, but they don't realize that why they're not able to concentrate on their homework or on their tests is really as a result of sleep deprivation. I've done the that that experiment where I go through the problem solving of how many hours are you missing. And some boys that I work with were missing 50 nights of sleep.
Goodness gracious.
If you do the math. So, you know, it makes a huge difference.
Right. And schools haven't figured out that cycle of teenagers. I don't know any teenager who wants to go to bed at 9 o'clock at night. Just their body rhythms have them go to bed later, and schools start way too. I think it should be at 10 to 6 if you can work it out somehow. Start at 10 or
end
at 5:30.
Yeah, you know, it's been really tough. It's one of those things where it just hasn't become a popular issue, but I think it should because it really ties into organization and time management. If you're really tired, you're not going to have the energy to keep up on top of things as well as you would if you're alert.
Right.
It's the same with adults.
And did I read in your book that it was 9 1/4 hours of sleep or pretty much required, 9 1/4?
Well, yeah, that's what the National Sleep Foundation, suggests for growing teenage adolescents. And most of the boys and girls that come into my office say they average around 7 hours a night. So that's a deficit of about 2 1/4 hours. You know, if you're getting about 8 hours of sleep, you're probably in much better shape. Because a lot of the kids, you know, would then argue that they catch up on the weekends, but they really don't because they go out at night on the weekends, and they also, a lot of them play sports that require them to be at games in the morning or tournaments in the morning, so they don't ever really have that chance to catch up on the weekends. For some kids, their weekends are even busier.
Right. We're going to welcome phone calls for you. Our guest is the author of that, I love the title, That Crumpled Paper was due last week, helping disorganized and distracted boys succeed in school and life. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you want to send an email, you're ever so welcome to do that. That is talk@WPR.org. Our guest is Anna Hamoyan. And we'll be with you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now. Let's start with Mike from Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. Not quite sure how to frame this, but I'll try to keep it simple. I have two boys, one 14, one 16. The older boy is a magnificent student. He takes AP classes. He's in wrestling. Cross country. He's taught himself how to play the trumpet. He's in a Navy program called the Sea Cadets. He's ongoing all the time and really requires no guidance from us in the sense of, you know, I think we find ourselves saying to him, hey, slow down. His younger brother is also as intelligent as he is, but he seems to be more focus more on the social side, I guess, of life, and his grades aren't bad, but I see that he's always trying to compete with the brother, and he's just different. So, what do you do in a situation like that? There's really not a problem, but I don't know if you get the gist of what I'm trying to say.
16, you said, is that right?
14 and 16, yeah.
Okay, and do they both go to the same high school?
Yes.
Okay, so one's, I'm assuming, a freshman and one's a junior?
One is a freshman and one is a sophomore.
One is a sophomore. Oh, so they're really close in age and in their placement in school. There's only a year apart. Well, a lot of times you pretty much hit it on the head. There's one of my five factors is the crippling fear of failure. And with boys, especially when they go through their freshman year, they're trying to adjust, they're trying to get through everything. And if they have an older sibling that has found a lot of success, it's hard not to look up to that or try and compete with that. Now, the key is, what I talk about is to figure out your own niche, whatever that is. And he's probably still trying to figure it out. One of the things that you can do, and probably that's why he's focusing more on the social, because that's where he's finding a lot of his success right away. I assume he's really, you know, socially active, and that's great for him. Is that true? Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, so if I was a boy, I always explain this to parents, if I was a boy and I was getting really, you know, a lot of kudos for my social scene, but academically I had this older sibling that it was really hard to keep up with, I think I'd gravitate towards where I was finding the easiest success. But what you can do as a parent is really focus on finding out what your own son's goals are and his own dreams. And he may not know that yet, but just planting the seed and having some one-on-one conversations with him about things that he'd like to explore and try. And it could be completely different than anything you've even thought about. Or it could be stuff that he's just right now afraid to try because he has someone whose shadow he's, even if nobody's comparing them, he's comparing himself to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And trying to find activities that might be completely different. And you may not have even thought about them, but freshman year is a great time to explore. And that's, so that, you know, one of the main things I talk about in my book is setting goals and figuring out what those are. And a lot of times boys haven't ever sat down to think about it. So parents or, you know, mentors or older adults are great resources to get them thinking about what they want to accomplish, whatever that is. And
yeah,
that can motivate.
Can I say something else?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was one conversation, confrontation that I had with him, which we were talking about his grades, which, I say they're not bad, but, you know, when I compare with the older brother, there's a lot of room for improvement. And his response to me was, well, I'm not my brother, and you're asking me to be like him. And I said, no, I'm not asking you to be like your brother. I want you to be you, but I know that you have a tremendous amount of potential which you're not taking care of. And I don't know if I'm connecting with him.
Yeah, usually when the word potential comes up, it can really cause boys to shut down. And especially since he already feels like he's being compared to his brother, one of the things that I usually talk about is, are you doing your personal best, whatever that is? Do you feel like you're doing your personal best? When you start to have the conversation in that way, you know, most boys will admit to themselves, no, I'm not doing my personal best. And start to frame it in that way. If you feel like this is your personal best, then that's fine. But, you know, what is your personal best, and do you think that's what it is? Because, again, you want to develop that intrinsic motivation within your son rather than having him focus on external motivation, that is, comparing him to someone else or having him be compared or having him feel like he's being compared to someone else.
Thank you very much for the call. And we as parents, too, you write about parents who have intervened in a lot of situations, and there are parents who intervene, that and it ties into what you were just saying, that our teenagers need to take at some point ownership of what their mistakes are and what their successes are, and ownership of scheduling their lives in some ways.
Oh, yeah. All the time I hear from students, actually, really recently, about how they're trying to get ownership of their schedule, and they have their schedule set, and then their parent goes and schedules something for them, whether that's an SAT tutor or, you know, a family thing or whatever, without even checking with them. And these kids have the rest of their schedule all set. They have, you know, practices, they have, you know, activities, everything lined up for themselves, so they feel in control, and then all of a sudden they have, you know, this happen. Parents often don't realize, and they're really well-intentioned, but they don't realize the level of over-involvement that they have in their kids' lives today and how that can really stifle their own child's development of organizational skills. So think about it. If you are a parent and you're constantly doing things for your kid and you're not letting your kid figure out, okay, if I don't remember my lunch, these are the consequences. If you're bringing the lunch to school every day or the missed homework or the missed that they have to figure these things out for themselves. And junior high and high school are the best times for that to happen, because once they go off to college or whatever they choose to do after high school, it becomes much more difficult.
Right. What was the story you told of somebody who had to make an appointment to see you, and he had never done anything like that before?
Right. So I had a senior that I was working with last year, and it was like 4 o'clock on it. And I was like, we were making another appointment, and I said, can you come in next Tuesday at 4 o'clock? And he said, well, I'll have to check with my mom. And he was like 18, a senior in high school, applying to college. And I looked at him and I said, you, have a car and you can vote and potentially defend your country, but you don't know that you can be somewhere where you can be at 4 o'clock on a Tuesday. And he kind of looked at me like, oh, that's a really good point. and so from then on, he kept the schedule. And what's been interesting is since the book has come out, I've noticed that a lot of my students now, apparently, I think their parents have read the book, because I have a lot more students contacting me directly about appointments, and they'll CC their parents. And it just, for me, it's great because it's so much easier.
Right.
And it gives them the ownership of, okay, I can contact this person. And the other thing is, the parents don't realize, when you give your child the ability to contact adults and to ask questions in a positive way, you're building their confidence and their communication skills. When you contact their teacher on their behalf, and sometimes it's necessary, I totally understand that, but oftentimes it's not. What you're doing is you're really stifling their own communication development. And so what I tell parents to do is, maybe you need to have a script with your kid, because a lot of kids get nervous. They're like, oh, I don't want to go see the teacher, I'm so nervous. So I often in my office say, okay, what are you going to say to that teacher? Pretend I'm that teacher. What are you going to say? And once they do it once or twice, they become more confident in their own communication.
Sure. Tina is next from Green Bay. Hi, Tina.
Hi. I have kind of the same situation as the last caller, but I have two girls. And my youngest one takes just a lot of really, like, got to stick on her for organization. And last year when she was in fifth grade, we kind of got it down to a science. But then she went into the middle school, and everything is different in the middle school. And they want, you know, your students to have certain color folders for every class, and they have to abide by this. And that's not the way she can organize herself. So I'm just wondering, is that kind of a common thing in middle schools, that, you know, it's more like a cookie-cutter thing that they kind of put in place, and this is what the students have to follow? We have finally got it back to the old system where she has all her things together all the time, and she's much more organized.
Mm-hmm. Well, each middle school is different, and I've been working with different middle schools around the country, and I find that sometimes they put systems in place that may seem to work, and they have to work through the kinks. So I don't know, you know, your daughter's middle school, but they try and put an organizational system in place because they have a lot of kids who struggle. So probably what has to happen is, you know, kids have to adjust in one way or another and really bring whatever's required of them from the middle school home and kind of brainstorm and problem solve and figure out what works best for them within that system.
Thank you, Tina, very much for the call. We should talk about some nuts and bolts here, binders and markers that work and pencils, et cetera. Surely there has to be some kind of organizational system, and to be truthful, I have yet to catch on to these as well. But you must teach, and we should all teach, how to keep things in a place.
Right. So the students that work with me have a binder for each subject, and that is, you know, three-hole punch binder, and then they keep one for each subject so that they don't have, like, what I call commingling, which is different papers from different subjects in the same binder, or they get misplaced. And within those binders, they have a place for, you know, the notes that they take in class, the homework, and that's really important. So kids know that when they get a homework assignment from their teacher, like a worksheet, they put it in the homework section. When they finish it, they put it back in the homework section so they don't, you know, misplace it. And place for handouts and all the old tests and quizzes. A lot of kids come in, especially if they've been really struggling in school, and they'll crumple up the old tests and they'll put it in the garbage or they'll hide it from their parents or whatever. And I tell them, you know, the quizzes are often reflective of what the tests are going to look like, which are reflective of what the final is going to look like. So it's going to really save you time if you keep all of those in one place. And the thing that the system creates with the binders is that it creates a place for everything. Very simply. And, you know, my system that I outline in the book can be adjusted for what the requirements of each individual teacher are. Because they do depend. I mean, some teachers do have different requirements.
Thank you for your call, Tina. We go to Allison from Mequon. Hi, Allison.
Hi. Very interesting, very timely for me because we just left parent-teacher conferences. I have a daughter who's a sophomore, and we heard the same thing that we've been hearing for years, and that's that she's one of the smartest girls in the class, but gets poor grades because her homework is late. She can't find it when it is turned in, it's right on, but they can't give her credit because it's so late. And when we confront her or, you know, try to help her with it, she's so frustrated that now she's saying things like, I don't care about grades. I learn the material, and I'm not working for grades. I'm working to learn. And, you know, kind of an antisocial kind of, you know, I'm not going along with what society wants of me. I'm just learning for myself.
Right, right.
And, you know, I really feel that it's almost kind of she's given up on being able to do anything, and we've tried so many systems and so many things, and now the school has suggested that she carry everything around in an open laundry basket, you know, to try to keep herself all together. And my heart breaks for her because, you know, I was not the most organized person, and I wonder if there's some kind of genetic factor. The hard way that if I'm not going to be organized, I'm not going to be successful in life. It's simple as that. It's not that I want to be organized. I just have to be organized.
Right.
And she, you know, it's just really hard on her. And I really feel like she's saying to me, I can't do it. I've tried everything. My brain doesn't work this way. And so, you know, she sounds a lot like some of the boys you're talking about, but she's a girl.
Right. And you know what? What also sounds like a lot of the boys, but disorganization affects boys and girls. We have girls that come into our office all the time that struggle with organization in really significant ways. So that's not uncommon at all. One thing, though, is that you've hit on is that she's really starting to give up because she's really finding the failure of not getting the credit. So she's starting to say, well, I'm not going to care about that. It's a lot easier to say you don't care or not than to care and then still struggle. One thing that I would do is, again, sit down and have a kind of a meeting on what are the things that you guys can do in your home to create a system that would work. And a lot of the stuff that I talk about in my book, you know, the three main things that parents can do, and this may help you, is to create a study space in the home outside the child's bedroom where they can do homework free of distraction. So you guys can work to create something like that. And then create a study hall time. And for your daughter, so it would be scheduled throughout the week, like a study hall time where the TV is not on, the radio is not on, the internet's not on. But for your daughter, what would be key each night is to also work on regrouping herself and getting everything where it needs to go for the next day. So it may be that you have to create the structure in your home in order to get that to happen. And the book is written for parents, too, who struggle with organization, because oftentimes I see parents come in and they say exactly what you said. I've struggled with organization myself, but I do not recommend you carry around a laundry basket.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, that's just a terrible
idea.
But she it sounds like she's really talented, and it may be that she needs to kind of figure out what would work for her, and she hasn't really stepped back yet to figure out what would work for her within, you know, what's happening in school.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your call. Here's an email that's come in. As an adult with ADHD, I've learned that transitions between activities such as work and then play or work between work and home. You write about this, too, that young boys particularly need some time when they get home from school to get engaged in something that they like or physical activity. The email goes on, I wonder if your guest could comment on boys and transitioning between activities.
Sure. Yeah, in my book I talk a lot about, you know, when boys come home from school, I usually tell parents and boys to take a half an hour off and to set a timer, get a snack, relax, but not to use any technology. Because for a lot of kids, once they get on the computer or they turn on the TV, 30 minutes turns into 4 hours.
Right.
So, you know, take a half an hour off and relax and have a snack. And then do what I call, depending on their age, but the two-hour block of homework. And how I sell that to kids or how I convince kids it's a win-win situation is if they start their homework at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they're done by 6. If they do that proactively, then they won't have that night where they have 5 hours of homework. And then at 6, they can be done for the evening. The evening is theirs if they don't have an after-school activity. But if they did have an after-school activity, say they get home later, you could do it from 7 to 9. And then at 9 o'clock, they're done. How many boys do we know, high school students or junior high, say that they work till 11 o'clock at night? But if you say, okay, without the music, without the TV, without the internet, you get things done in about 2 hours, for many kids, that's just one of the most motivating factors, that at 9 o'clock you could be done with all your work, even if you played a sport.
Alisa is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Alisa.
Hi. My question for your guest is, I know your book focuses on adolescents, but I wonder how well this translates over to adults. I look at my husband, and, you know, he's taking college courses, and he has a very hard time organizing himself, and he looks at something and he says, okay, it should only take me an hour to do something to finish this assignment, but 3 hours later, it's still not done, but he has music going, he's on his Facebook account, he's text messaging his friends, he has 15 internet browser windows open. The level of disorganization is, for me, it's very mind-boggling, because I'm just the exact opposite. And I know it frustrates him. And, you know, he's tried to say, okay, well, yeah, I'll turn off the TV, I'll stop doing the texting, but then he seems to zone out, and he's not able to really focus on the assignment. Having the extra stuff go on helps him focus better, but it just takes him so much longer, and then he gets very frustrated, and I'm not sure if you know what your guest writes about in your book, if this is something I could read and perhaps help him with this.
Well, even though the book is written for, you know, adolescent boys, there are certain segments of it that really ring true for any person that struggles with, you know, disorganization and distraction. Particularly, you know, the parts about, you know, setting the time to do things without the distractions. You mentioned that your husband becomes more focused when he has many things going on, but that he's unable to get it done in a timely manner. Sometimes if you just whittle it down to one thing, maybe it's, and I often say to kids, if they need to listen to music, and I generally don't suggest music, but it's music that is just instrumental, so it doesn't have lyrics. So for some people, that can help them, provide the outside source. They have to listen to music. But if it doesn't have the lyrics, it doesn't have the distractions of the music. And so, you know, it really depends. The other thing is that using a timer for a lot of people, even adults, helps, which is where you set a timer for a certain amount of time, like 40 minutes. You work for that time, and then you take a break. And the last thing, you know, I would say is the technology box, where you put your, you know, technology in the box while you're doing whatever it is you need to do, you know, your phone, your access to the internet, and then work on what you need to work on, and then go back to that.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting, because to him, taking a break is going on the internet and, you know, doing other technology.
Right, and so he could do that when he's not doing his work. You know, a lot of the tips in here do translate into adults being more efficient. And in fact, I've heard from a lot of adults that are parents that have said, you know, I'm starting to use this or this in my own life. So,
well, and we have so much more, right? So that I'm a victim of this, too. If you're trying to concentrate on reading about the State of the Union, or for my case, even reading your book yesterday, I'm also distracted by, oh, I wonder what's in the news. And I go to all these internet sites to find out what's in the news. It's there and available to us, and it's almost become so much a part of our day that we forget how to just sit and concentrate on the task at hand. I can understand why it's hard for kids. It's hard for us.
Right, absolutely. And that's one of the main things I talk about in the book, is that, you know, parents need to realize that even 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we had none of the technology in the way that we do now. And kids are bombarded with technological distractions.
Yes.
And really, it's not their fault that they don't know how to manage it yet, because we don't know how to manage it yet. It's completely new to us.
Yeah. More phone calls in a moment. We're speaking this hour with the author of That Crumpled Paper Was Due Last Week, Helping Disorganized and Distracted Boys Succeed in School and Life. Our guest is Anna Hamoyan, and our number is 800-486-8655. The email address, if you want to send one of those, is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to your phone calls. Gary from Milton. Hi, Gary.
Yes, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Really appreciate your guest today. I've got a high school sophomore who's just always had a hard time getting homework assignments turned in. He does them. He puts them in his backpack. He goes to school. But then when we go to the parent-teacher conferences, we just get a continual feedback from them that, you know, he could be doing much better if he just gets his assignments turned in. And it seems like no matter what we do, how we talk to him, how we try to follow up, it just doesn't happen. So we're just looking for a way of trying to connect with him and help him understand, you know, how important it is to get it done and, you know, try to find an answer for how do we do that.
Well, I usually, again, what I talk about in my book is the win-win situation. So with boys, the way to motivate them is to come up with a way where they understand that it's to their benefit and they'll have more time to do what they want if they're not stressed about their missing homework. It sounds like your son's doing his homework. So what I usually talk about with boys is, how terrible is it for you to do the homework and not get the full amount of points?
Right.
You've already spent all the time doing it, you know. And so we work on, you know, for him, it might be that he needs an organizational system like the binders that I talk about. And you might be able to, you know, spend a weekend, like a weekend or afternoon. I usually like say Saturday afternoon is a great time to just go through all his backpack and his papers and create binders with him or have someone else do that, so that he can create a system that works for him, so that when he's done with his homework, he puts it back in the homework section so he doesn't miss it. The way I present it to boys is not, you know, you need to get better grades because you, you know, are capable of it. I'm more like, well, you've done all this homework and you want to turn it in, or it's going to save you time in the long run of the stress of not having the homework in, or you really want to do well, but you're missing the homework, which for a lot of, in a lot of classes is what would translate into free points, because if you get it done and it's done correctly, you get the full credit.
Right. It makes all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of kids don't realize this as well, that when they get a zero on a homework assignment, it's actually not an F, because an F is a 50%. So I always say a zero is more like an R, and you're like lower on the alphabet, because you're setting yourself up so that when you turn in those three A's, you still have a C average.
Mm-hmm.
So for a lot of kids, once they kind of see that, but it's not, it's presented in a factual way rather than a you've done something wrong way. It's a lot about the attitude and approach the parents can take.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. And what about those students who decide, I'm just not going to do this homework because it's of no interest to me?
Well, you know, I always talk about there's a lot of things that are, not of interest to us in general, but I always encourage boys to find what part of it is of interest. If a kid comes in with an example of something, I can usually find a way that they can create homework assignments to make them more interesting for them. The other thing, though, is, and this is more of a teacher, you know, suggestion, is that teachers can also create assignments. I've seen this done, where boys can get actively involved and learn things and become more engaged. For example, I've seen teachers who have done video options for homework. Instead of writing an essay, you can create a video. These boys spend 8 hours editing and creating a video. They know the material better than any other student I've ever seen, and they get very excited because they can then put it on YouTube or something like that.
Yes.
So it's just becoming creative in the ways that we promote education for boys, too. I mean, that's a larger question, but I think it's an important one to keep in the back of our minds as well.
Thanks, Gary. Tom from Stillwater, Minnesota. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
I'm a long time, retired at the present time, but I was a middle-level principal for 25 years, so I can really relate to what your guest is saying. And we started what we called the one-to-one laptop program, in which every student had a laptop 24/7. And I found that my young men in school were much better organized because they had ownership in this machine. They were much more creative. It was a pretty extraordinary experience. And it confronted a number of problems that people have communicated to you today.
Anna?
Well, you know, I think that's wonderful. I think anything that can get boys more engaged is great. I think something that a lot of schools sometimes have found is that the increase in technology now that the kids can go on the internet and do instant messaging, can also create distractions. So it's a really big challenge to find that fine line of using technology effectively and also not creating more distractions for kids in the classroom.
Thanks, Tom. Steve from Madison, hi.
Good morning. A very interesting program. I haven't heard you address attention deficit disorder. I had two daughters. They're both adults now. One of them in high school was diagnosed with ADD, attention deficit disorder. I wonder if you screen for that in your work, because a lot of what you're describing fits her to a T. She required a lot of tutoring, prompting, et cetera. She'd actually get the work done, but it would be left in her backpack or left in her locker. She wouldn't turn it in, even though it was done. So do you screen for that? And I guess I'm curious as to whether you see more prevalence of ADD in boys or girls. Thanks. I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Thanks, Steve.
So we actually have a lot of students that, not a lot, but a good number of students that come to us after that they've been diagnosed with ADD or ADHD. So we have a fair number of students that we work with that have issues that they're dealing with, and the organizational system that we help them put in place and we help them take ownership of really helps them with their own struggles in school. So certainly, a lot of the things that I talk about in my book deal with strategies that can help students that do have ADD and what parents can do to create solutions.
And thank you very much for your call, Steve. Our number, we have a couple minutes left. If you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Let's talk to parents here for just a moment, Anna. When you talk about parents being angry, frustrated about their child's academic performance and needing to let it go in order to move on, do you have any suggestions of how parents can do that? Because this is a habit that they're into as well. They're unhappy about child's performance, lack of organization, and it's gone on for a long period of time. How do you let it go?
Well, in the last 2 weeks, I've had a couple parents come in, and they've been new parents. And I talk about this a little bit in my book, where they come in and they want to sit down with us, with their child there, and talk about all the things that their kid is doing wrong in terms of organization. I mean, one woman started talking about how her son is a complete procrastinator, and he's just terrible at this. And the kid, you could see the kid shrinking and shrinking and shrinking until she left, and then he was totally a normal kid. And we came up with, okay, let's see how we can help you. And so that is really the attitude that needs to be adopted. How can we help you get where you want to go rather than let's focus on where we've been or what has been happening in the past? How can we focus? How can we create a fresh start to get where you want to go, wherever that is? One of the things parents really need to do is realize that boys especially don't mean to be this way. They really struggle in school, and a lot of the kids that come into my office want to have a system, or they actually do have a system in place, but it's not working for them, and they don't know how to figure out one that does. So it's really one of those things that's sad to see, because you can see the effort in their eyes or the want to do well. And parents need to understand that their son or their daughter oftentimes does care and just doesn't want to really reveal it. So what parents can do is step back and say, okay, what can we do to help? And look at what they can do to create a positive framework that the child can then move forward from.
Nathaniel from Menominee is next. Hi, Nathaniel.
Yes. I myself am a 20-year-old, I don't know if you want to call me an adult yet, but basically I have ADHD so severe that actually like different lobes of my brain are at different sizes than they would be for a normal human. And one of the things that I noticed growing up in school and even being in college is that a lot of times homework is mainly just useless repetition. Like, there's no major point in actually giving homework because it's just repetition of what you had in class. And I notice that a lot of times now teachers do that because their students are not paying attention in class very well. And I think that, if people just design their classes now to be more oriented towards, just teaching and learning the material in class, they wouldn't have to do it outside of home unless they wanted to study on their own because they don't understand the material.
Sure. I mean, I think that one of the, for example, in algebra, a lot of the problems I was doing with a student yesterday were different ways of asking the same question. And since she was struggling with it, it made sense to do it. But you know, it is a challenge for educators to come up with the right balance, and I certainly commend them for that. And I see that a lot in my office.
Right. And educators do bear responsibility for coming up with things that are at least semi-interesting. Homework has to have a reason.
Right. One of my greatest teachers was a chemistry teacher who he said he would give no busy work, and I think I learned more in that class than any other class. So it's certainly possible.
Right. Well, thank you so much for being with us. Your book, I would imagine, will do very well. You've keyed in on a very important problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our guest, the author of That Crumpled Paper, was due last week, Helping Disorganized and Distracted Boys Succeed in School and in Life. We thank Anna for her time. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda as well for on-air production. In case you're interested in getting the book, you spell her last name, H-O-M-A-Y-O-U-N. I'll be with you again Monday at 9. John Zogby will join us. He's president and CEO of Zogby International, the worldwide research and marketing firm. He will be here to talk about all things political, which we always do Monday at 9. Thanks for listening, everybody. A reminder, we're on Facebook right now. If you want to leave comments, chat a little bit, just go to Facebook, and it's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Until Monday, thanks for listening. This is the Ideas Network.